Welcome into Locked On Nets, and on today's show, Marcus and I will talk about D'Angelo Russell going supernova and the Nets power forward problem. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are live from the Locked On Nets studio, aka my apartment. My name is Josh Bass, and rejoining me is my man, my co-host, and most importantly, my friend, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on?
Wow, Josh, you're my friend too. I missed you on the pod. I saw you in real life since the last time we recorded, but not for podcast purposes, so good to be back.
It doesn't normally happen that we hang out and then don't do a podcast, so it was actually refreshing.
A rare moment for us, just getting brunch.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could have recorded our brunch at Red Rooster and just posted it on the Locked On Nets feed, but unfortunately for the fans, it wouldn't have had much, if at all, talk on the Nets or the NBA in general.
Probably none, I would say. A lot of talk about the food.
Yeah, and how hungover our friend Cam was.
Sure,
that was really the two main topics of the day. So, yeah, maybe we'll do a bonus episode at some point. It's just our lives without the Nets. But we had the Nets in our lives last night, and they had a thrilling victory over the Charlotte Hornets, 117 to 115. The Nets were dominating in the first half. They went into the break up 13, were up 69 to 50 at some point, 90 to 74 at other points. And then Kemba Walker really got going, was burying threes. Tony Parker was killing the Nets all night. He finished with 21. Cody Zeller was causing havoc and just drawing fouls on what seemed like every loose ball. But really, D'Angelo Russell was the story in this one from the Nets' perspective. He dropped a 40-piece, had the Nets' last 14 points, or not the last 14 points for the Nets, but he had 14 points in the last 3 minutes and 24 seconds alone. Marcus, he was really the hero in this one with that go-ahead three.
Yeah, I think he had the last 12 points to give him 40 total, which tied his career high. And I was interested early on because I thought that he looked a little bit out of control. Like, he was pressuring Kemba really hard, and he picked up a quick foul. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of flung up a wild shot. But as we've seen from him, he doesn't really play, like, a full bad game anymore. Like, he has bad moments still, like everyone does. But he's always kind of able to pick himself up and contribute in some way. And obviously in this game, it was in a big way with 40 points, 7 assists. And, yeah, Kemba gave the Nets a scare in the third quarter for sure. He kind of was, like, powering that little comeback in the third for Charlotte just by himself. Mm-hmm. And then going into the fourth when the Hornets, like, took the lead, which I was very surprised by. But luckily, D'Lo came through in the clutch.
Yeah, it seemed like the Nets were kind of stuck in mud during that Hornets run. And the ball movement wasn't there on offense. They were getting out-toughed by guys like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Cody Zeller. I mean, you never see Ed Davis out-toughed, but it was kind of one of the rare circumstances that you did see that. Shabazz Napier couldn't really get going. Caris LeVert had a really bad game, hit a couple threes, but was 0-4 from two-point land. Had some nice defensive possessions, but I think overall just a poor performance from him. So really, it was D'Angelo Russell and then Joe Harris were the two guys getting involved for the Nets on the offensive end. Kind of what did you see, Marcus, which led to that Hornets comeback? Because for me, it was just the Nets were listless.
Yeah, it was that, and then there was also like a little bit of fluky stuff. Like MKG made a three, which I don't know if I've ever actually seen in real life.
Yeah, and then they were running out at him so hard after that.
That's what I was just gonna say. They like closed out to him, and then he like drove from the corner. Like the fact that he made one three was like crazy enough. Mm-hmm. Like I doubt he's gonna make another one. So I would kind of play the percentages there. But beyond that, I agree that the Hornets were kind of flustering the Nets. They had like a shot clock violation at one point. And then mm-hmm. Zeller, like you mentioned, who has been playing really well of late since the Hornets like don't really have much center play. He gets a lot of the minutes there. Biombo played some, which was strange also. But yeah, Zeller had like some nice tip-ins. He was just kind of really active. And I mean, we've talked about in the past how Jared Allen can kind of struggle against bigger guys also. And so Zeller, obviously not as skilled as some of those other guys like Vucevic or that type of player, but he can kind of bring that impact for little stretches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Biombo capitalized on his – was he named to the NBA Players Association board, or maybe he got a promotion on it? But he's part of that. So he was capitalizing that and parlayed it to 11 minutes in this game. Yeah, I don't know. I thought Jared Allen did have some nice moments defending the rim, but I don't know. He missed a couple finishes. It feels like the plays that should be in ones, he hasn't finished those. And then there's some plays where he'll just miss an easy shot, and took a couple threes in this one, which I'm still confused why we're going for that Jared Allen three-point experiment, especially in games when they're 6 of 39. I mean, if this were last year when the Nets are terrible, then sure, go for it. But they're 31 and 30, and especially when it's a close game, I don't necessarily want Jared Allen like practicing his three-pointers. There's a reason that it's called practice, and you do it then as opposed to in games.
Sure, we're talking about practice. We are. But there's been moments, I think, where Allen's hit big threes. Like, I think it might have been in the Cavs game he hit, like, a big one. Mm-hmm. But like you said, just, like, the numbers aren't there. And so at a certain point, you kind of have to know who you are. And that's a big thing come playoff time. It's, like, playing within yourself. And that's something that the Nets have been really good at when they've been, like, on their run in January and into February a little bit. Just, like, knowing who guys are and playing within your role.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marcus, really the big story coming out of this one was that Kemba Walker shot late where he had the ball, was dribbling it up. The Nets had a foul to give, so they gave that. And then with about 5 seconds, he rushed up, was going into his three-point motion, and LeVert almost kind of like knocked his elbow into the ball and maybe got some body, but it wasn't a call. The NBA last 2 minutes report came out today, and it said that it shouldn't have been a foul on LeVert, and actually Kemba Walker traveled, which you do see on replay. I'm not shocked that the refs didn't call it just because the adrenaline's pumping and that, and you're not necessarily looking for a travel. You're looking for a foul on that. So I was pretty happy with the no call. It seems like the NBA agreed with me, but what were your thoughts there?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I missed the travel in real time, but then I was watching a replay right before we started recording, and he does travel, and that's kind of why LeVert gets up in the air when he does, like, at first, I thought that Kemba just, like, had a good pump fake and got Karis a little bit, but it's kind of because he did, like, a Bradley Beal and took an extra step or two. And then LeVert didn't really block the shot. He kind of just, like, fell into the ball.
He ran into it, yeah.
It was great timing by him. And I think it was a good, even though, like you've mentioned, LeVert has kind of struggled at times coming back from this injury, it was a good window into, like, D'Lo being the offensive closer and LeVert being the defensive closer, like, kind of locking up the Kemba Walker type on the other team. Maybe that'll be Kyrie Irving in the playoffs, but just like the opposing team's lead ball handler, I think he can be really good at that, at defending the point of attack with his length.
Yeah, I agree. I tweeted this from the Lon account, follow us at Locked On Nets, but saying I really like Caris LeVert defending point guards. And he didn't always have the best defense last night. I think Tony Parker did a nice job of getting to his 16-footer every time he wanted to. But there were a few possessions where he just locked in, and between his length and then his length to recover, even if he goes under the screen, his speed. He's just kind of a very physical, imposing presence when he's guarding a point guard. So I really like that. And, you know, with D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie, they do have the size to cover at the two and let Karis defend the one. So it's an interesting combination. Couple other things to note. How about our boy Trevor Booker? Recent guest on this podcast, everyone go listen to that. Being at the game and getting to hang out with some of his ex-Nets teammates, great seeing T-Book there.
It was great. He had a little interview with Grady on the sideline. Apparently he has Hornets season tickets. I did not know that, but good to see him there. And I think we're going to talk about it a little later, but the Nets have had some problems at the power forward spot. Maybe our guy Trevor Booker can get back into it.
Yeah, it's like I saw him. I'm like, oh, that's my friend.
Friend of the pod, at least.
Yeah, at least friend of the pod. Yeah. I'd like to think he's a friend to me.
Sure.
But yeah, great seeing Trevor there. One other thing I wanted to talk about. How does Damari Carroll keep getting the same foul call where he like leans in and does the rip move? I don't understand how defenders just like put their arms behind their back, because he gets it called at least twice a game. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, I had never noticed that he did that until I started watching like the Nets games more closely. And then they pointed out a lot on the broadcast. They're like, oh, there's Damari just like kind of running into someone. And it's always like 12 feet away, like on the elbow. He's like running and just like kind of flings his arms up. I don't know. It works.
And he completely commits to it. So if the defender doesn't go there, it's like a wild shot off the backboard. He's averaging 3.8 free throws a game. And I'm sure 3.5 of them are from that same rip move, foul drawing thing. Because he's not athletic. He's not particularly big. He just has that one good move, which is literally banking him probably 2 or 3 points a game.
Yeah, honestly, if D'Lo could like take that move from Damari, that could be really useful in like getting his scoring more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I were Atkinson, I'd just have Damari Carroll teach a practice and be like, every guard or perimeter player on this team, just learn this move. We need to learn it.
It's the James Harden thing, kind of. Just
yeah,
like swinging up and drawing a foul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but James Harden, he's not the threat that Damari Carroll is to score the basketball.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Anyway, that's going to do it here for segment one on Locked On Nets. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about how Caris LeVert has looked since his injury and the power forward rotation and the struggles that have come with it. All that and more on Locked On Nets. We are back, Locked On Nets here. And quickly, just want to say you can get our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play the podcast Locked On Nets. That's if you take your car. You know, you might be walking, you might be biking, city biking like our friend Gavin, taking the train, bus.
If you get into an Uber, tell your Uber driver.
Yeah, tell your Uber driver to play Locked On Nets, or your Lyft driver, or your Via.
Sure.
Or your Chariot, which is a new one that I learned about recently. Do you know that one?
I do not.
It's like basically, it's like an Uber pool, but it's, I think, nicer, and they have a better system, so you're not waiting. It's like, I see it. I'm sometimes waiting for the subway, and I'm about to walk into the station. And I'll see like someone, a Chariot pull up. Someone runs in, and then they sprint out, and it goes to Brooklyn also. That's their big thing.
Wow. I like the name.
Yeah, it's a good name. Maybe we should take it. Do a live podcast from a Chariot.
That could be arranged. We didn't do it at brunch, so we owe the people a live podcast.
Exactly. We also owe the people a quick two, or as I'm calling it in this time, long two, because I want to talk about these two things for a long time. Marcus, first of all, you didn't get to be on our last podcast when I went solo talking about the Blazers' loss, but Rhodey Karutz was a healthy scratch from that one. He was benched, only played 10 minutes in this one. Obviously, Rhodey has been struggling a bit, but I don't think either of us saw him completely getting axed from the rotation. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson played a lot against the Blazers, didn't play any minutes against Charlotte. Right now, Kenny Atkinson seems lost in the sauce between his four power forwards, Rhodey Karutz, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, Travion Graham, and Jared Dudley. And the guy who probably is the best out of those four, or of those five rather, Damari Carroll. Marcus, makes sense of this power forward rotation to me, because it seems like Kenny is just at a loss.
Yeah, and I don't totally put the blame on Kenny. I think we talked about it pre-deadline and like in the last couple weeks, where we like knew that this was a problem for the team, and it hasn't really been addressed. I think they're kind of relying a little bit too much on Dudley once he comes back, just because he's the best outside shooter of this group and the guy who can space the floor.
He's back, right? He's just not playing.
Oh, I guess, yeah. Well, if he ever gets back in the rotation. I mean, because we talked about with Allen, where you don't really want him shooting threes, and like in today's NBA, you can't have two guys on the floor who aren't shooting. So I think that they definitely need offense from that position. It doesn't have to be someone who can like create their own shot. Like, I think Rondé and Graham, to like a lesser degree, both kind of drive in and like almost demand the ball, even though they aren't like very efficient offensive players. I think a guy who is like a Joe Harris or Allen Crabbe type, but is just bigger and can defend bigger players, would be the best fit, which is kind of what we were talking about with Mirotić is a possibility, or like some other guys, but I don't think that they have like an answer right now on the roster.
Yeah, I think we both agree that Rondé is clearly the worst fit, right?
Yeah.
He is unplayable for me, because I just can't with this guy, because between him not being able to space the floor, his shot selection's terrible, so it's like even when he is shooting, it's just never going to go in. He's taking these wild attempts. I feel like he's actively detrimental to the team. Kurtz, at least with his energy, with his cutting, could make some stuff happen. JD, I mean, I'm confused why he got benched, because maybe Kenny just wants to give him even more rest and have an extended vacation for him. Just send Jared Dudley to Costa Rica. Give him the trip Mike Budenholzer was supposed to take before he got named to the All-Star Game coach, because he was shooting 36% on threes on three attempts a game in the month of December, and that was really the last full month that he was healthy. So I thought he was doing a decent enough job playing 18-20 minutes a game. And then probably what's best for the Nets, if they just go Damari Carroll starting at the four, playing 30 minutes a game, and then piece around the bench. And that's going to be easier once Spencer Dinwiddie comes back, because now you have more options at the one and two and can play Joe Harris and Allen Crabbe exclusively at the three.
Yeah, and I think I really like Carroll, and I think Graham should still be in the rotation. Yeah. I think he's a good defender. I like that he played only 19 minutes in this game. It's still weird that he's starting, I guess, over Carroll, but it doesn't really matter who starts. It's more about who finishes. And like you said, with Dinwiddie back, it'll kind of push everyone back a slot in the rotation.
Yeah, do you like Graham better with the starters or with the bench?
I guess ideally it wouldn't be like just all one or all the other. Like they kind of stagger it, but you don't really need him for offense, so maybe in that case he is better with the starters. Like, he's not going to, like, demand any shots or anything. He's just kind of going to stand there and occasionally catch and pump fake and then drive wildly a la Rondé.
Yeah, I think he's almost better with the starters just because his defense is more valuable defending better players. Like, if the Nets are playing the Spurs tomorrow, I mean, we don't really need Travion Graham locking in on Davis Bertans. We want him on DeMar DeRozan, really being that primary matchup there. So I think that when you have a defensive specialist, it's almost better to play him on the other team's starters. But, yeah, I don't know. His offense is just really lacking for me. He had one really nice drive yesterday and hit a three, but I'd love for him to be consistent. Even if he was shooting 35% or so on threes, that would open up so much for the offense.
Yeah, and it's just like we've talked about. It's not necessarily how many you make. It's like how many you take and if the defense respects that you're going to take them.
Yep. It's not about how many you miss. It's about if you get back up right after that. The Travion Graham story. Anyway, Marcus, the second part of Quick 2, what's your concern level right now on Caris LeVert? Because Caris has played 5 games now since coming back from his injury, and obviously want to talk about how great it is that he even was able to come back from it this season. A lot of us thought that he was going to be out for the season, obviously, and having detrimental impact to his long-term health and his career. But he's played 5 games since coming back, 35% from the field, sub 27% on threes. Just hasn't looked quite right. Athletically, he looks good, but his timing seems to be off. What's your concern level, 1 to 10, on Caris?
It's honestly pretty low, probably like a 3. I think you're much more concerned about this than I am, just because we've seen other guys who, when they come back from injuries, it like takes them a while to ramp things up. I think it's a good sign that he does still seem to have his speed and that he's able to make plays like that block he did on Kemba Walker, even if it was kind of a little fluky, like just that he's able to guard the other team's best player down the stretch with, like, in a one possession game. I think that that's a big step. The shooting is obviously concerning, especially if he's going to keep starting, because like we said, if you have him, Graham, and Allen, and if he's not hitting shots, that's a lot of like clogging for D'Lo to try to drive into. And so obviously you hope that picks up, but it's an encouraging sign, at least to me, that he has the energy and the activity.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't know, maybe I'm just being rash about this, and I'm crazy, so I overreact to one game way too much. You know, I've followed this team for too long to just feel comfortable and assume that it's all going to be roses and lollipops are going to be flowing everywhere and that we're all going to be back and happy to where we were pre-injury with Caris LeVert. But I'm at like a 4.5 because for me...
That's lower than I thought.
Yeah. No, I was going to be like 7, but then I'm like, okay, that's crazy. So 4.5 for me. My thing is he's only attempted 6 free throws in the 5 games he's been back. That sucks. And, you know, his shot's not good. It really never has been. So he really relies on getting to the basket. I just want him to have that one game where he goes 8 of 11 from the field, scores 20 points, super efficient, making plays on defense, and then I'll be like, okay, we're good. Until he does that, I'm still going to be like, okay, come on, what's happening here? I mean, he shot the three a little bit better his last few games, but he's just missing easy finishes on the offensive end. We saw that in the game against, I think it was Chicago, his first game back, where he was Toronto, the second game back, where he was getting to his spots, getting like wide open, easy layups, and just flubbing them at the end of drives.
Yeah, I was going to say that Chicago game, I think, could have been that game where he put up like 20 if he hadn't been on a minutes restriction. Mm. He looked really good in that game, and I thought he was really explosive and was kind of just getting wherever he wanted, especially late. He was like the only reason that the Nets were still in the game. So I think I've seen flashes, and that's kind of all you can really expect after 5 games.
Yeah, that's fair. Hopefully it comes against San Antonio tomorrow. And speaking of that San Antonio game, we'll talk a bit more about some other teams in the NBA, and one being the Boston Celtics and their dysfunction, coming up on segment 3. Welcome back here. Marcus, quick news item to take care of. Our boy Spencer Dinwiddie, I guess it's been about, 4.5-ish weeks since he got hurt? Actually, it might be 5 weeks at this point. Or a little bit more than that, but he is still not close to returning. According to Brian Lewis, he's still a couple weeks away, and Kenny Atkinson said that he would be happy to have him back for the March 11th road trip, but not sure if that's going to happen. So any concern for you that Spencer is going to be out longer than that initial 4 to 6 weeks timetable, it looks like?
Yeah, I am a little concerned, just because obviously it was on the early end, but we thought he might be back like right after the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think that was like right on the front end of his timeline. Like that was exactly 4 weeks or something. But so it's been a little bit after that now. Hopefully he's back soon. I think that, like Kenny said, he wants him back for that road trip. And down the stretch, the Nets schedule gets really tough. So that's when you most need him. We said if they could kind of tread water until he gets back, that's kind of all you want. And they've done that so far. So hopefully that can keep going.
Yeah, I know. They're treading, and that's fine. But I want them to be like Michael Phelps or Ryan Lochte and just be breezing through that water. But yeah, they do need Spencer back. And it's annoying because the Nets are always so conservative with injuries and very secretive. And, you know, it's fine because they're winning. And Sean Marks does come from that Spurs pedigree where he wants to just keep everything quiet under wraps and say, no, just trust me, and let's be dismissive towards the media. But yeah, this Nets team definitely needs him. Despite that win against Charlotte last night, it was a tough one, and they went to triple overtime against Cleveland of all teams. So really, with Karras struggling a bit, D'Angelo Russell is the only guy that can just go and get a bucket whenever the Nets need it. So having Dinwiddie back will take a lot of pressure off D'Angelo Russell and be able to provide Karis LeVert more opportunities to play off ball.
Yeah, and I think part of why we thought he'd be back so soon was because LeVert seemed like he came back way earlier than we both expected. So I thought maybe this was like a new thing where the Nets weren't going to be as conservative, but it seems like maybe they still are. So.
Yeah. No, it's disappointing, but I think, you know, it's for the better good. And Spencer Dinwiddie, I think more I'm upset because he's my favorite player to watch on this team. So I'm just like, oh, come on. It's not the same without Dinwiddie.
I see him with that little hand thing on the bench.
He has a splint.
Yeah. I guess that's what it's called.
Yeah, it's tough to not have him out there. Marcus, let's talk about one of the Nets' Eastern Conference competitors, and that's the Boston Celtics. And for me, I just wanted to take a moment to cherish the dysfunction that's happening in Boston right now because, you know, the Nets and Celtics have had a storied history since I've been a basketball fan. They had those battles in the Eastern Conference Finals where the Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce team would always fall at the hands of my beloved Nets. And then obviously the KG and Pierce trade. And I feel like over the last few years, the Celtics fans have really relished how bad the Nets have been and how badly they've ripped us off. So excuse me if I want to take this season where the Celtics, according to Bill Simmons and folks, were going to win 60 games and be the class of the East and even have a chance of dethroning the Golden State Warriors. And now they're 37-23. They're still below Indiana, and there's dysfunction every game or two between Kyrie Irving talking out against his younger teammates and Jaylen Brown saying there's no leadership and Marcus Morris saying what the hell is happening here. I just wanted to cherish how badly things are going in Boston, and it seems like the inmates are running the asylum in Brad Stevens' world.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's one thing that, like, coming into this podcast, even as a Knicks fan, I was, like, on board with hating the Celtics right from jump. So that is good to see. I'm curious on your opinion on this, just because right now, like, the way the standings are, the Nets would be playing the Pacers in the playoffs. But would you rather play the Celtics? Like, do you want that shot at the team that kind of, like, took away the last few years of your, like, basically your chances at being relevant? Or do you want sort of like easier on paper matchup against the Pacers?
Yeah, so I was talking about this a little bit with Josh Lloyd on our Locked On NBA segment today, and everyone should listen to that and everything Josh does on Locked On NBA and Locked On Fantasy. But you know what? I think you have to take the easy matchup at first. You don't want that to happen right off the bat. You want to build the suspense, and the Nets have a better chance of beating Indiana, so we'll go with that. You know, in dodgeball, Globo Gym didn't play average shows in the first round. They played some other team. So you need to wait.
I think they played the team of, like, S&M people.
Yes.
It might was be it for them or, like,
the kamikaze people?
They played a few teams. Yeah, I think they played a German team also, David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Great movie.
You have to let the suspense build. Yeah, also a movie that's really held up well, I feel like, in the last 15 years probably since it was released.
I've rewatched it a few times for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big Vince Vaughn guy.
I could say that.
I've seen all of his work.
He's a master. You know, he knows what he's doing.
And also a tall guy. Maybe the Nets could use him at power forward. He's probably 6'4", 6'5". But yeah, I would love to take a shot at Boston. I think there would be nothing more delicious than knocking off the Celtics and just trolling Bill Simmons' Twitter feed and all of his Ringer lackeys. And I love the Ringer, so I shouldn't say that. But you have to let the suspense build. And I feel like it would, if that happened in the first round, even if the Nets won, it would be amazing. They would probably just get destroyed by Milwaukee or Toronto in round two. So I'd rather that the Nets beat Indiana, and then we'll see what happens. But even beating Indiana would be a tall task, because Nate McMillan, who I always thought was kind of a like below average to mediocre coach before this, has done such a good job this season with those guys.
Yeah, especially defensively. I feel like they're one of the only teams in the NBA that's kind of like figured things out on defense. Like, a lot of teams, just their plan is to outscore now. Mm-hmm. And the Pacers are more slowed down, and that's partially, I guess, due to losing Oladipo. They kind of have to shift who they are. But well, that would be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, the Pacers' plan eventually is to outscore the team.
Sure.
Just by keeping the other team's score down.
That's fair. Yeah, they just go about it in a different way.
Yeah, Miles Turner's averaging 2.7 blocks a game.
He's really good on defense.
Yeah, he's such an athletic player, and I feel like he's really been able to harness that. And his instincts have always been good, but really now he's just like playing without fear on the defensive end.
Yeah, the question for them is just like, who's their offensive guy in crunch time? I guess it just kind of depends on the game. But yeah. I think like if they like play the Nets in a series, like, D'Lo might be the best player in the series.
Yeah, you could say D'Lo or Dinwiddie even.
Sure.
But yeah, that's the thing with the Pacers. They're very deep. Anyone can win you a game. Edmund Sumner can win you a game. Kyle O'Quinn can win you a game.
Great guy.
Yeah, I love Kyle O'Quinn so much. I feel like he had so many great Knicks moments last year, between showing up to the bar mitzvahs and then saying he loved chopped cheese.
Yeah. Also, I went to a Knicks game once where he like took the big, I was sitting like pretty close, he took the big like bucket of gum on the scorer's table. Yeah, thank you. He took the big bucket of gum on the scorer's table and like gave some to some kids sitting nearby. He's just a jovial guy, you know?
Yeah, I'd love the Nets to get him as like an insurance third center option.
He's a real Ed Davis type, honestly.
He is. He's an Ed Davis with like an 18-footer and then much worse at everything else.
Yeah, big beard.
Yeah, big beard. They'll be fitting well with Brooklyn. You get him on the Howard Beck podcast, and Howard Beck would make like 20 hipster jokes. So yeah,
him and Joe Harris, you know.
Yep, absolutely. They'd have a nice kinship there. And we have a nice kinship, Marcus, and appreciate you taking the time. This has been a long pod for the listeners out there.
I missed you.
Missed you too, despite brunch yesterday. It was great. And I also missed the Ethiopian food dinner, which I'm upset about.
Great meal. Shouts to Bunna Cafe in Bushwick.
Yeah, yeah. Bushwick, maybe go there before or after a Nets game.
Sure.
You could.
Cash only, remember that.
You're in the same borough. Yeah, cash only, good tip. I'm looking at it now. It looks good. It's a bustling outpost, provides Ethiopian vegan fare, cocktails, and regular events in a low-lit dining room.
Great atmosphere. Sound accurate? I'll say. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's going to do it here on Locked On Nets. You can follow myself at jmbass_. You can follow Marcus at Marcus Bearhall. And you can follow, more importantly, essentially both of us, if you follow the podcast account at Locked On Nets. Please rate and review and subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts in your feed. And remember, play it in the car or the Uber or the Chariot. It will be doing us a favor, and we will become your best friend. Marcus, I'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.